Gretchen on my right, who is already back in a seated position, her palms pressed together. Namaste, Gretchen says in unison with the other women in the room. Bonnie snickers like she always does. She doesn't take the whole thing as seriously as Gretchen, but she likes to keep herself flexible for, well, you know. Okay, guys, Gretchen says as she scrambles back to her feet. Time for coffee, right? I look over at Bonnie as I roll my mat back up. It usually takes me at least 2 tries to roll it tight enough to fit back in the bag. Unless you need to get ready for another date with the hot doctor. Bonnie laughs and Gretchen arches an eyebrow. Hot doctor? What is that all about, young lady? I adore Gretchen, but she is super nosy when it comes to hearing about our dating lives, especially since she became exclusive with Randy and doesn't have her own dates to get excited about. She says she has to date vicariously through us, although I find it a little offensive because I would love to have a serious boyfriend like she does. Well, maybe not like Randy, but someone I like as much as she likes him. I'm not too jealous of Gretchen, though. When we first met, she was still hung up on some guy she'd been dating who broke her heart. But now it seems like she's over it. That's what a good relationship will do for you. It gives me hope for my own future. Bonnie pulls her blonde hair out of her green scrunchie, shakes it out, then secures it again. Let's get coffee and I'll fill you in. 15 minutes later, the three of us are squeezed into a table at the coffee shop next door to the yoga studio. The shop has notoriously bad service, but we are too lazy to wander any farther away. Gretchen tries to flag down a waitress, waving her hand frantically to get the woman's attention. Don't forget, Gretchen says, it's my treat. How come? Bonnie asks. Because Gretchen was too busy having hot sex with her boyfriend and she abandoned her escape call duties, I explain. I feel so bad about that. Gretchen gives up on the waitress and turns to look at me, her lip jutting out slightly. Between my two friends, Bonnie is objectively prettier. She has the silky blonde hair and curvy body. But Gretchen has a very sweet face, with big anime eyes and a button nose that has a smattering of pale freckles across the bridge. Plus, she looks pretty good in yoga pants and her snug flower-printed V-neck t-shirt. Do you hate me now? A little, I say. I would have given you an escape call, Sid, Bonnie says. I shake my head. Weren't you too busy on your date with Dr. McHottie? Oh, right! Gretchen's eyes light up. What's that all about? I didn't know you were dating anyone seriously. I'm not, Bonnie squirms in her seat. I mean, it's not official yet. He is still very skittish, but... A secret smile touches her lips. I really like him. Really, really. Is he hot? Gretchen asks. So hot, Bonnie confirms. He's honestly just... He's perfect. He's the kind of guy who makes me glad I never settled. I can't help but notice that she looks directly at Gretchen when she says the word settled. Hopefully Gretchen doesn't notice. That's awesome, Bonnie. I reach out to give her hand a squeeze. I hope he doesn't turn out to be a jerk. Bonnie makes a face at me. Gee, thanks. I wince at what I now realize was an unnecessarily bitter comment. Bonnie met a great guy. Why am I trying to plant doubts in her head? I should be happy for her. But it's hard not to be skeptical after all my dating experiences in the city, culminating with last night's worst date ever. I'm sure he's great, I say. There are just a lot of jerks in this city. Right, and I've dated pretty much all of them, Bonnie points out. He's not one of them, I promise you. I deserve a decent guy after all my crappy dates. You totally do, Gretchen says. I bet he's amazing. I hope you'll be as happy as Randy and I are. Bonnie's lips tighten at that statement, but thankfully she keeps her mouth shut. If Gretchen knew what Bonnie really thought of Randy, she would be crushed. Anyway, Gretchen says, To change the subject slightly, the new exhibit I've been working on at the museum is opening tomorrow. If you guys are free, I'd love you to come see it. Gretchen works at the museum, presumably earning next to nothing. She also has one of those micro apartments downtown, and I can tell she is eager to move in with Randy, who has a decent-sized apartment supplied by our landlord. I can't blame her. I'd love to come, I say. Yes, totally, Bonnie says without enthusiasm. While Gretchen returns to her task of trying to flag down the waitress, my phone buzzes in my purse. I pull it out, and sure enough, there's a message from Bonnie waiting for me. Do we really have to go to this museum thing? I shoot her a look. Bonnie is notoriously unexcited about Gretchen's Natural History Museum exhibits, but I think they are pretty cool. Gretchen has a job that she loves, and I give her kudos for that. Not that I don't love being an accountant, but, well, being an accountant isn't anyone's dream job. It was one of those practical things my parents told me to do. It's a great job that you can do anywhere, and you can still work after you get married and have children. Yes, even in college, I was preparing for the eventuality of getting married and having children. Pathetic, right? I never dreamed that 10 years later I'd be no closer to that goal. I haven't had one decent date in the last year. And even though I am happy for them, it's hard to watch Gretchen with her boyfriend, and even Bonnie now settling into an exclusive relationship with Dr. McHottie. I miss having a boyfriend. I miss cuddling on the sofa. I miss having a warm body next to me in my bed every night as I drift off to sleep. I miss, well, you know, that. God, why couldn't things have worked out with Jake? But when I close my eyes, I don't see Jake. I see that mystery man from last night, who I can't seem to get out of my head. I haven't had a jolt like that in a really long time. I blew it last night with my bloody forehead. But part of me wonders if there's still a chance for something to happen. If only I could find him again. Hey, I blurt out. How can you find a missed connection? A missed connection? Bonnie asks. Gretchen turns to look at me, and at this point I tell the two of them the whole dramatic story. Gretchen clutches her chest, now doubly sorry that she didn't come through with her rescue phone call. But when I tell them about the guy who saved me, they look so excited. Gretchen probably would have spit out her coffee if our waitress had shown up by now. That's so romantic, she cries, her big eyes practically circles. So what happened? Unfortunately, I grimace. As Bonnie can tell you, I had a big, ugly gash on my forehead and he took off. It wasn't that bad, Bonnie says, although her cheeks turn slightly pink like they always do when she's lying. Still, I say, I wonder if I could find him again and I can look more presentable this time. Totally, Gretchen bobs her head. I heard a story about a guy who met a woman on a plane, and he never got her last name or her phone number before the end of the flight. So he launched a Twitter campaign to find her, and he did. That sounds awfully elaborate, I say. I don't even have a Twitter account. What about Craigslist? Gretchen says. Don't they have a whole missed connection page? Craigslist? Bonnie shakes her head. Do you want her to get murdered? Gretchen ignores her. Or maybe you can check Cinch and see if he has a profile. If you met him around here, I bet you can narrow down your searches to a few miles radius. That's not a bad idea. It seems like every single person in the city has a profile on Cinch. If he is single, I bet he's on there. Would I seem like a stalker if I messaged him through Cinch? I ask. No way, Bonnie says. Dating is cutthroat these days. You do what you have to do to survive, you know? And if he's a decent guy, it's worth it. Totally, Gretchen agrees. Bonnie and Gretchen almost never agree on anything. So the fact that they both think I need to find this guy seems like some kind of sign. I'm going to find Mystery Man. Although, even as I'm strategizing with my friends about finding this guy, I can't help but wonder if maybe I shouldn't. Maybe it's not such a good idea to get involved with a random guy I found wandering around my neighborhood late on a Tuesday night. But I'm sure it's fine. After all, he rescued me.
Chapter 8. Before. Tom. Daisy is busy after school today, volunteering at an animal shelter. She's always volunteering for something. I, on the other hand, am still scrambling to fill that tutoring slot that I lost this semester, because it's the only way for me to get spending money. In any case, she's not around to let me walk her home, so I end up walking with Slug.
So, did you score with Daisy yesterday?
Slug asks me, as he kicks some dirt on the sidewalk with his size 13 shoes.
I can't talk about that.
He grins at me.
That means no.
It means I can't talk about it, I say, even though he's right. It does mean no.
Maybe you and Daisy could double date with me and Allison.
Allison doesn't like either of us. Unfortunately, it's true. When I talked to Daisy at her locker after school, Allison hovered nearby, shooting me dirty looks. The only person she seems to hate more than me is Slug, but it's a close call. I hope she doesn't trash-talk me to Daisy. If she does...
Come on, you gotta help me out, Tom, Slug says. All the girls like you. It's not fair.
That's not true.
Bullshit! It is true and you know it.
Okay, he's not entirely wrong. After I had my growth spurt, I started getting a lot of looks from girls. My mom is really pretty. She even did some modeling when she was young, and she always says I take after her in looks. But really, I couldn't care less about girls liking me. There's only one girl that I care about.
I'll see what I can do, I lie.
I can't get Slug a girlfriend. I would if I could, but I can't. He's actually a really good guy, but something about him makes girls nervous.
Thanks, buddy.
He pauses on the sidewalk, looking down at a particularly busy anthill. Anything insect-related fascinates him.
Now that the winter is over, I bet the queens are laying eggs again.
Slug is a wealth of information about anthills. For example, did you know that the surface of an anthill is actually covered with small entrances that the ants open and close like doors? And did you know that anthills can reach heights of 8 feet tall and be hundreds of years old? If you destroy an anthill in front of Slug, you should just get out of town right now. In his eyes, that's an unforgivable offense. The one time he got suspended from school was when he gave Johnny Calhoun a black eye after he kicked apart an anthill. The whole time Slug was wailing on Johnny, he kept shouting,
"You're committing genocide!"
And he wonders why he can't get a girlfriend. "Do those ants look delicious to you?" I ask him. Despite his fury at Johnny when he kicked apart the anthill, which was needless destruction, Slug believes that eating insects is perfectly okay. Sort of the natural circle of life. He laughs.
"I don't know why everyone is so against consuming insects. They're animals, just like all the other meat products we eat. Is it really so much worse than eating a cow or a duck or a pig?"
Yes, it really is.
"One day I'm going to make you a cake entirely made from crickets, and it's going to be the best cake you ever ate."
It'll probably be the last cake I ever eat. He punches me in the shoulder, although not hard enough to hurt.
"Hey, can I come over to work on math homework?"
What he really wants is for me to do the work, and then he'll copy my answers. I've known him long enough to know the routine by now. And after he copies my answers, he'll stick around for dinner and eat every scrap of food in our kitchen. "You know," I say, "if you keep copying my homework, you're never going to be able to pass the exams."
"So what? It's just math."
"You still need to pass."
"Nah, it's not important to my future career."
He shrugs. Slug only recently discovered that studying bugs is an actual job that people can have. So now his biggest career aspiration is to become an entomologist. But who knows how long that will last? Before that, he wanted to be a mailman. And before that, he wanted to be a cop after Chief Driscoll invited our class on a tour of the police station. "Fine," I say, You can come over. He grins again. Even though he's only 17, his teeth are already yellow. It's probably from the cigarettes.
You're the best, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. When we get to my house, I discover the door is already unlocked, which means my mom is home. Half the time, she leaves the door unlocked because it's that kind of neighborhood, so it doesn't surprise me. But I am surprised to find my father standing in the hall, yanking on a jacket. Dad? I say. My father, like Daisy's father, towers over me. He is 45 years old, but the spider web of purple veins on his nose and cheeks makes him look at least 10 years older. I know how genetics work from biology class, but I could swear I didn't inherit any genes whatsoever from this man. He is tall and burly, while I am medium build and lean. Even if I grow another inch or two, I'm never going to look like him. We're nothing alike. Nothing.
What are you doing home so early?
He grumbles. School is over, I remind him. There are alcohol fumes emanating from his skin. It's not even 4 in the afternoon, and my dad is already sloshed. Great. His face is pink from the blood close to his skin. Did you know there are about 12 pints of blood in the average male body? If you lose more than 40% of that blood, you will die. For a man my father's size, that means he is about 5 pints of blood away from death.
And you brought your loser friend, Cockroach, my father observes. Fantastic.
I consider reminding him of Slug's actual nickname, but there's no point. I'm not sure a slug is any better than a cockroach anyway.
I'll be home late, my father mutters under his breath. Don't bother your mother, okay, kid?
Before I have a chance to answer, he pushes past me. He marches out of the house, slamming the door behind him. I never liked my father, even when I was a little kid. Frankly, it's a relief when he takes off like that. Hopefully, he won't be home for dinner. Or maybe he'll crash his Dodge and he'll never be home again. As my father's car revs up in the garage, I lead Slug into the house. Naturally, he makes a beeline to the kitchen. Slug is always eating. Always. He weighs less than Daisy's backpack, and yet he's always stuffing his face. My mother is in the kitchen, washing dishes in the sink. Her hair is loose, running halfway down her back. When she was younger, she used to have jet black hair like mine, but now it's threaded with lots of gray strands. She doesn't bother to color them. I don't know if it's my imagination, but my mother's body seems to stiffen when we walk into the room. She drops her head so that her gray hair becomes a wall around her face.
Hey, Mrs. Brewer, Slug says.
My mother murmurs a hello without turning around. I stare at the back of her head, my heart thumping in my chest. I have a bad feeling I know what's going on here. It's happened before, after all. Mom? I say. It takes her a few seconds, but she finally turns around. The expression on her face is apologetic, even though she is the one with a split lip. I stare at her, my hands balling into fists until my knuckles turn white.
Mom? I opened the cabinet in my face.
She gingerly touches the open wound on her lower lip, which definitely wasn't from some kind of accident.
It looks a lot worse than it is.
I glance at Slug, who has already got her refrigerator open and is scavenging for food. I don't know if he saw my mother's face, but he's decided to stay out of it.
Tommy, she says softly, don't make a big thing of it. I'm fine, really.
It's been 6 months since the last time I saw my mother with bruises on her face. 6 months since the last time I wanted to take my fist and smash it into my father's face. I thought things were better. He stopped drinking as much. I thought, I'm fine, she says firmly. She looks over at Slug, who has grabbed an entire wedge of cheese and some chips from the pantry.
You and Slug go on up to your room. Mom, Tom, let it go.
Her jaw is tight. Maybe she used to be a model when she was younger, but those days are long over. Like my father, She looks about 10 years older than she really is. Although she is still pretty enough that Slug will sometimes look at her in a really inappropriate way. I don't want to let this go, but what can I do? Still, I can't stop thinking about my mother's battered face, even when Slug and I are up in my room. We're sitting together on my bed, and we're supposed to be doing math homework, but I can't focus. I just keep thinking about my father's fist smashing into my mother's mouth. My father is so much bigger than I am. If I ever stood up to him, it wouldn't turn out very well for me, especially if he were in one of his whiskey-fueled rages, when he looks like he could lift an entire car and spin it around over his head. If it were me against him, he would win, unless I had a way to even the fight. I can't believe he did it to her again, I blurt out. Slug is sitting at the other end of my bed, crunching on a Dorito.
You okay, man?
No. I throw my number 2 pencil across the room. It hits the wall, leaving behind a gray smudge.
I hate my father.
Slug grunts.
I know.
I called the police on him once. I got sick of his tantrums and thought maybe I could help my mother, even though she told me not to. I still remember the stunned expression on his ruddy face when the cops showed up at our front door. I was pleased by how scared he looked, until my mother went and denied the whole thing. She defended him. She went along with his bullshit story about how she fell down the stairs. After that, there was nothing the police could do.
I'd like to kill him, I blurt out.
Slug looks up from the spiral notebook on his lap. Slug and I have been friends for 10 years, and I've never said anything like that to him before. I've never let on the sorts of wild thoughts that run through my head sometimes. I've been careful about it. Even though Slug is my best friend, I don't expect him to understand. I don't know why I said it now, except I can't stop thinking about it. I expect his face to wrinkle in disgust, but weirdly, it doesn't. Instead, he says,
Well, why don't you?
What? I stare at him. What did you say? He lifts a shoulder.
Nothing wrong with killing someone if he deserves it.
Actually, there is.
Not really. It's illegal. I would go to jail. Only if you get caught.
Slug fingers a zit on his face, which has turned bright white and is on the verge of popping.
He's joking. I mean, it's not like this is a funny joke or anything, but he has a pretty twisted sense of humor. He's not seriously suggesting that I should really kill my father.
At least, I don't think he is. For a moment, I allow myself to imagine it. I imagine those 5 pints of crimson liquid oozing out of my father's body until he finally crumbles on the floor, his eyes rolling up in his head. And for a split second, it feels so real that I almost think I'm going to be sick.
Chapter 9. Present Day. Sydney. After we finally get our coffee, Gretchen heads to the museum to take care of a few things for her exhibit, which is opening tomorrow. Bonnie and I walk back to our building, and the whole time she's got that same secret smile on her face. Boy, she's really gone. I've never seen her like this. We are about 3 blocks from the apartment building, at the exact same spot where Kevin attacked me last night, and as we approach the building where I pretended to live, I see a man sitting on the steps. When he notices us, he leaps up.
Sydney!
He cries. Oh no, it's Kevin, his thinning hair tied into another messy ponytail. Didn't he get the message when I kneed him in the balls last night? I felt like it was pretty clear. But he's coming toward me with open arms, like we're long-lost lovers. Bonnie shoots me a questioning look, obviously wondering if this is Mystery Man. I shake my head emphatically at her.
Sydney, he says again. Can I talk to you?
He glances at Bonnie.
Alone?
I fold my arms across my chest. No, you may not. You attacked me last night.
Bonnie's eyes widen. This is that guy?
Yes, he is, I say tightly. and I'd like you to leave, Kevin. He's wearing a pair of frayed blue jeans that are sagging slightly on his narrow waist, and he grabs the waistband to haul them up.
We had a misunderstanding. I was just trying to say goodnight, and you took it the wrong way.
I promise you I did not.
Sydney, he says pleadingly, you're my perfect woman. Don't let something great slip through our fingers.
His perfect woman, except for my monster arms. Sorry, not interested. Kevin nods in the direction of the building where he thinks I live.
Could we go inside and talk about this for 5 minutes?
Bonnie has been listening to this whole exchange, and when I glance over at her, she looks furious.
Oh my God, she pipes up. Sydney obviously doesn't want to talk to you.
She reaches into her purse and pulls out her phone. Either get out of here right now, or I am dialing 911 to tell them a creepy guy with a ponytail is harassing us. Kevin looks between the two of us, as if debating what to do. Finally, he takes a step back, his hands in the air.
Okay, fine. But you're making a mistake.
His eyes darken as they bore into me.
A big mistake.
I cringe as I remember the way he grabbed me last night. I was lucky enough to be saved, but I might not have that kind of luck next time he corners me.
No, you're making a big mistake if you ever go near my friend again, Bonnie snaps.
She punches 9 and 1 into her phone, then holds it up.
Do you want me to dial the last 1? I'm happy to do it.
Kevin gets the message this time. He scurries away, his ponytail bouncing behind him. It's only when he's out of sight that I nudge Bonnie.
Nice job. You are seriously kind of a badass.
Yeah, well, she buffs her fingernails on the sleeve of her shirt.
I'm much better when the guy isn't fixated on me. If he came here looking to harass me, I'd probably be inviting him up for coffee now.
When I'm certain Kevin is definitely gone, we continue on our way back to our actual building, a few blocks away. When we reach the inside of the lobby, we find Randy standing on a step stool, swapping out one of the light bulbs overhead. He barely needs the stool, though, since he's freakishly tall, even taller than Kevin. Definitely well over 6 feet, with baggy eyes and dirt that seem permanently ground into the ridges of his fingers. He's not my taste, but I can see what Gretchen likes about him. He's scrappy.
Hey!
He winks at us as the door behind us swings shut.
Where's my lady?
She went back to the museum, I tell him.
Ah, I miss her already.
Bonnie rolls her eyes at me, and I elbow her in the ribs. She said she'll be back in an hour or two, I say. By the way, Bonnie says, my toilet is making that strange noise when I flush it again. Can you come by to take a look?
Sure.
Randy finishes with the light bulb and steps off the stool, dusting off his hands on his jeans.
Is it okay if I come by tomorrow morning? A bunch of people are having problems with their air conditioning, and they're going to give me hell if I don't come by today to fix it.
I guess so. Bonnie narrows her eyes. Tomorrow morning? Like what time?
How's 9?
Bonnie works from home like I do, so she nods. Perfect. Randy sets about changing another light bulb while Bonnie and I head over to the elevators. It's only after the door swings shut that Bonnie drops her voice and says, will you come over to my apartment at 9 tomorrow?
You're joking.
I'm not. She adjusts the scrunchie in her hair. I don't want to be alone with Randy. He gives me the creeps.
Bonnie, he's totally harmless. I mean, Gretchen is dating him.
She arches an eyebrow.
He seriously doesn't make you at all uncomfortable?
Honestly, Randy seems perfectly nice. He's been the super in our building since I moved in. And every time he has been in my apartment, he's been extremely respectful. He's never done anything I would consider threatening in the least.
And yet, there's something about the way he looks at me sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes.
He stares just a little too long. And it doesn't exactly feel like he's checking me out, like some guys do. It's something else. I can't quite put my finger on it,
but I can't pretend I don't know what Bonnie means when she says he's creepy. You know, I say, my toilet sometimes makes weird noises too. Usually I just take off the top of the tank and there's a little handle inside that I jiggle and... No thank you, Bonnie interrupts me. I'm going to let the super take care of my toilet needs. Will you come or not? Fine, I say. 9 o'clock? Make it 9:15, she says. I'll brew some coffee. 90% of my social life these days consists of drinking coffee with friends. But, oh well, there are worse things. And, hey, maybe Bonnie can help me track down Mystery Man. Chapter 10. I've got to be at Bonnie's apartment in 15 minutes. I woke up about an hour ago. I showered and nearly put on the pair of sweatpants that I've been wearing with increasing frequency during the week. Working from home has its advantages, but I'm starting to look like a slob. Instead, I put on a pair of yoga pants, which are ever so slightly better. Bonnie said she would make coffee, so right now I'm drinking some pre-coffee coffee. I have spent the last half hour scrolling through Facebook while contemplating deleting Facebook. I used to enjoy it, but every single one of my friends' posts now seems to consist of babies upon babies. Is anyone besides me not procreating right now? These women, who I used to call my friends, seem to be charting every insignificant milestone in their babies' lives and posting them online. What if the babies want some privacy? I wouldn't want 8 different perspectives on my eyelashes posted to the internet. And then, of course, the baby bumps. Do I really need to see a profile photo of your stomach every single week for 9 months? And yes, I can judge them, because at this rate, I am never going to have children of my own. I can't fathom the situation in which this would possibly happen. Last night, I wasted a good hour on Cinch. Over the last year, it has become by far the most popular dating app in the city, possibly because it touts itself as being exclusive to New Yorkers. An NYC zip code is required to join, which, of course, makes it irresistible. Jersey girls need not apply. Other than being New York exclusive, it's a fairly standard dating app. Each profile contains a photo and the usual stats. Single or divorced, has kids or want kids, investment banker or janitor. But one advantage it offers is the capability to search all profiles within a given radius. That's how I attempted to find Mystery Man. I searched all the guys in Mystery Man's approximate age range living in a 2-mile radius. I extended it to 3 miles and then 5. I looked through every damn profile, and there was not one guy who resembled Mystery Man living within a 5-mile radius of this building. Yes, I am that desperate. In any case, I am left with 4 options. 1, Mystery Man is single and the one guy in the city who is not on Cinch. 2, Mystery Man is single but doesn't live in my neighborhood. 3, Mystery Man is not single. 4, Mystery Man is gay. That's a different search term. The first option seems like the most likely. Maybe he's single, but he doesn't believe in internet dating. That's fair. The second option leaves me feeling a little perplexed. If he is single and he doesn't live around here, what was he doing in a residential area all alone in the middle of a Tuesday night? And that's when a wild thought suddenly occurs to me. Bonnie was in the lobby when I got home, having just finished her date with Dr. McHottie. And then, by chance, I ran into an attractive guy only a few blocks away from our apartment building. Is it possible that Mystery Man and Dr. McHottie are one and the same? No, I don't think it's possible. That would be a strange coincidence, wouldn't it? Anyway, Bonnie said her doctor boyfriend has blonde hair, and Mystery Man has very dark hair. Wait, she did say that, didn't she? I think she did. While I'm contemplating this possibility, a message pops up on my phone from the Cinch app. While I was searching for Mystery Man last night, another guy named Chad requested to connect with me. He looked pretty cute in his profile, all sparkling green eyes and dimples, and he seemed nice enough, so I accepted the connection. And it seems like Chad wants to talk. See, I don't need mystery man. There are plenty of guys out there, and I'm ready to get back on the horse, as long as we stick to crowded areas this time. I grab my phone to check the message, expecting that Chad wants to set up a time to get drinks. He hasn't done anything heroic for me like Mystery Man, but I don't need a hero. I just need a decent guy. Except then I read his message, and my heart sinks. Hey, Sydney. Sorry about the ruse, but it's Kevin. I really want to talk to you about the other night. I really feel like we had a lot of chemistry, and I don't want you to blow it because of a misunderstanding. He doesn't want me to blow it? Is this guy for real? I block his profile and report it to Cinch. I'm irritated that he was even allowed to sign up under another profile. Don't they have any quality control? The man is dangerous. I wonder if I should go straight to the police this time. Does this constitute harassment? In any case, I don't have time to call the police right now. I've got to get over to Bonnie's apartment. She told me to be there at 8:45, and she is a sucker for promptness. Besides, Cinch is starting to depress me. Is it possible there are no decent men left in the entire city? I'm starting to think half the guys on Cinch are just Kevin in disguise. I take the stairs down one flight to Bonnie's apartment, which is almost directly below mine. I get there at 8:46 and press my thumb against the doorbell, waiting to hear her footsteps after it echoes through her apartment. But after 30 seconds, there are no footsteps. Bonnie hasn't thrown the door open. There's no sign anybody is even home. Great. I ring again, letting my thumb linger on the doorbell longer this time. Bonnie told me to show up at this exact time. She wouldn't stand me up at her own apartment, would she? But then again, emergencies happen. I reach into the side pocket of my yoga pants and pull out my phone. I check my text messages, but there's nothing from Bonnie telling me not to come. I shoot off a message to her. Hey, everything okay? I thought we were meeting at your apartment at 8:45. I wait for bubbles to appear on the screen, indicating she's typing in a response. But there's nothing. After another minute, the elevator doors for the floor swing open. Finally, she must have gone out to grab more coffee or something. Except it isn't Bonnie who steps out of the elevator. It's Randy, wearing his usual worn blue jeans and a t-shirt hanging loose on his skinny frame. He raises his hand in greeting.
Hey, Sydney, what are you doing here?
Bonnie told me to come because she finds you too creepy to be alone with. Bonnie invited me over for coffee, but she doesn't seem to be home. Like me, Randy rings the doorbell. Once again, we wait for sounds of her footsteps behind the door. But once again, the apartment is silent. This is really strange. It's not like Bonnie at all. He glances down at his Casio watch.
I've got a busy day. I can't wait around for her.
But you have the key, don't you? Randy's spidery fingers fly to the oversized key ring hanging off his jeans. He has the key to every apartment in the building. He has been in my apartment several times when I wasn't around. With my permission, of course. So you can get in, right? I press him.
I guess.
Randy's Adam's apple bobs slightly. He is so skinny that his Adam's apple is painfully large and sharp. It almost looks like you could slice a finger touching it.
But Bonnie doesn't like me to come into her apartment when she's not there.
It hits me that Randy is aware that Bonnie doesn't like him. I wonder if he has any idea exactly what she says about him when he's not around. More importantly, I wonder if Gretchen has any idea. Gretchen is one of those people who is obsessed with being liked by everyone, and I'm sure she wants everyone to like her boyfriend as well. I'm just worried about her, I admit. This isn't like her.
Maybe something came up?
Look, I say, you don't have to fix her toilet, but can we at least just go inside and check on her, like for 1 minute?
I don't know.
Please, I'm worried about her. When he hesitates, I add, I'll tell her I made you do it. He looks down at his watch again and sighs.
Okay, just real quick, though.
Randy takes what feels like forever sorting through every key on the giant ring until he finds the right one. I keep looking over at the elevators, hoping that Bonnie will suddenly materialize carrying a bunch of coffees from Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, I'm sure she's fine. She probably had a date last night with Dr. McHottie and is currently cuddled up in his big bed with his million thread count sheets. I'm happy for her, I swear. Randy finally gets the door open, but he lets me enter first. As I step into Bonnie's apartment, I half expect to see her racing into the living room with a towel wrapped around her midsection, furious with the two of us for busting in while she was trying to shower. But no, it's completely silent. Bonnie's apartment is almost identical to mine in its arrangement, but it looks so different. Bonnie likes nicer things. I have my bare-bones sofa and desk and bookcase, but she spent a lot more time picking out an expensive leather sofa, a chestnut coffee table, and an antique armoire. Her apartment looks like something out of a magazine article on Manhattan living. Bonnie? I call out. No answer.
I don't think she's here, Randy says.
He's right. It doesn't seem like she's here. Undoubtedly, she's out with her sexy doctor boyfriend. I get what it's like to be snuggled in somebody's bed and not want to grab an Uber home at 2 a.m. But for God's sake, she could have at least called me to tell me she wasn't going to be able to make it.
I may as well check the toilet while I'm here, he says.
Randy wanders off in the direction of the bathroom. I stay behind in the living room and reach for my phone again. There are still no messages from Bonnie. Seriously, this is kind of rude. I would understand if she canceled at the last minute, but to not even call at all? Finally, I select Bonnie's name from my list of contacts. I'm going to at least let her know that I was waiting for her, as promised, and that now she owes me a coffee like Gretchen did. Except when I connect the call, I immediately hear her ringtone, coming from inside the apartment. Okay, that's strange. I turn my head in the direction of the ringing sound. It's coming from the kitchen. I step into Bonnie's kitchen, which is about as tiny as mine, so it takes roughly 5 seconds for me to spot her cell phone sitting on the kitchen counter, next to a black scrunchie. Bonnie's phone is still in her apartment. And that's not all. My gaze drops down to the linoleum floor. As a rule, Bonnie is a stickler for cleanliness. But right now, her floor isn't clean. It is stained with dark brown circular droplets forming a trail that I now realize leads out of the kitchen and down the hallway to Bonnie's bedroom. Oh my God. Randy? I croak. Hang on, he calls back. I'm just trying to fix the toilet. I follow the trail of droplets down the hallway, my heart pounding. I pass the bathroom, where Randy is fiddling with something in the toilet tank, oblivious to the bloodstains on the floor. The trail leads directly to Bonnie's bedroom door, which is closed. Maybe she's okay. Maybe she had a minor accident and is just sleeping in to recover. Of course, Bonnie isn't the bleeder I am. Aside from me, most people don't track blood all over their apartment without noticing. I reach out and rest my hand on the doorknob. The thought occurs to me that maybe I should call the police instead of investigating on my own. But then again, I'm already here. I don't want to call the police over nothing. Maybe Bonnie is fine. Maybe everything is totally fine. Slowly, I turn the doorknob. I push the door open, revealing Bonnie's queen-size bed with the lavender bedspread. And when I see what's on the bed, I can't stop screaming.
Chapter 11. Before. Tom. Today is the day I am going to kiss Daisy. Maybe. It's the third time I've walked her home from school. When I parted ways with Slog, he warned me not to chicken out. I'm determined to do it today. Daisy and I are holding hands again, and I'm doing a great job of not being sweaty. I'm focusing all my energy on it. Daisy keeps smiling at me as she talks about the health fair she's volunteering at this weekend. She's always volunteering somewhere. She's so good. And I am so... Will you come, Tom? She asks me. Come? I say blankly. She laughs. To volunteer at the health fair. They can always use more hands. And you want to be a doctor, so it would look good on your college application. Sure. It probably would look good on my college application, but I don't care about that. If Daisy asked me to eat garbage, I would do it. She claps her hands together. Wonderful! What about Slug? Will he come? Doubt it, unless he thinks he can find a girlfriend there. She giggles. Does he still eat bugs? Even though he won't do it publicly, I would be very surprised if Slug didn't at least occasionally pop a beetle or two in his mouth. He seems to genuinely enjoy them. But it won't help his prospects if a rumor spreads that he's still eating bugs, so I just say, nah. Anyway, Daisy says, let's meet outside the community center on Saturday afternoon, before it starts. Or we could have lunch first? Daisy pulls a face. Sorry, I can't. There's so much I have to do. Rejected. Maybe Daisy is having second thoughts about me. Maybe this will be the last time she'll ask me to walk her home. Maybe I shouldn't try to kiss her. How about on Sunday? She suggests. We can meet after church? I smile and nod, not bothering to mention the fact that my family doesn't attend church. My mother used to go when she was young, but my father thinks the whole church is a bunch of swindlers, and he won't let either of us go. Not that I would go, even if I were allowed. There is something about walking into a church that makes me very uneasy. As we're walking by somebody's backyard, I spy a flower growing out of the grass with a yellow center and soft white petals. A daisy. Naturally, daisies are Daisy's absolute favorite flower. Before we can walk past, I pluck the flower from the ground and hold it out to her. For you, I say. I thought she'd get a kick out of it, but instead, her face falls. I thought you liked daisies, I say. Yes, but... She scrunches up her face as she looks down at the flower, still in my hand. You killed it! It was growing happily in the ground, and now it's going to die! Oh. It never even occurred to me that she would think that way. Is there a way to save it? She shakes her head sadly. No, there isn't. She tugs the stem out of my hand. But I'll put it in water when I get home. At least it will last a few days that way. Great. Now I'm a flower murderer. It's okay, Tom. She squeezes my hand. You didn't know. I lay my palm on my chest. I will never kill a flower ever again. And I mean it. I will never kill a flower ever again. My declaration has brought a smile to Daisy's face. She tugs on the hem of my t-shirt, bringing me closer to her. I realize now we're only about 6 inches apart, and she's looking up at me with her clear blue eyes. I can barely think straight, but there's one thought in my head that is very, very clear. Kiss her. So I do it. I dip my head down and press my lips against hers, and they are just as soft and perfect as I imagined. She's so delicate. I'm not a big guy, but she's a lot smaller than I am. If I grabbed her head and gave it a solid twist to the left, I could break her neck. It wouldn't even be hard to do. You are a very good kisser, Mr. Brewer, Daisy breathes, when our lips finally separate. Thank you, I say. She winks at me. Your first time? I hesitate for just a moment before deciding to lie. Yes, mine too. She runs a finger playfully down my chest. I always knew you were going to be my first kiss. And now I'm doubly glad that I lied. It's not like there's any way she could find out the truth. Nobody else but me is around to tell her. I'd like to do it again very soon, she tells me. As would I, I say awkwardly. It's only when she pulls away from me that I realize that while we were kissing, the daisy fell from her fingers. When I look down, I see it under my sneaker, the white petals smashed into the pavement.
Chapter 12. Present Day. Sydney.
I can't stop shaking. The police are here. Officers wearing paper boots and gloves are tromping in and out of Bonnie's apartment, doing whatever police officers do at a homicide scene. I have been sitting on Bonnie's expensive leather sofa, which she was so excited to get a great deal on, and I have spent the last 20 minutes rocking back and forth and hugging myself. Nobody has asked me to step outside, which is a good thing, because I don't think I could walk right now. Randy was the one who called the police. I can still hear his voice echoing in my head.
Her name is Bonnie Griffin. She asked me to come over to fix her toilet, and we found her in the bedroom, and she's dead.
I will never get the image of Bonnie lying on that bed out of my head. Not for as long as I live. This wasn't a woman who just went to sleep and never woke up in the morning. She wasn't that kind of dead. I don't think I've ever seen that much blood in my entire life. And I have seen quite a lot of blood. A female officer comes over to sit down beside me. Her hair is pulled back into a tight bun, but she has a kind face. She rests a hand gingerly on my shoulder, as if she's worried I might break. "How are you doing, Ms. Shaw?" she asks. I can't quite manage a response. I suppose that's an answer in itself. "We have a detective being briefed outside," the officer tells me. "He'd like to ask you a few questions, if that's okay. Do you think you're up for it?" Again, I can't get my vocal cords to function. "I know it's hard," she says gently. "But you want to find out who did this to your friend, don't you?" "I do. I really do. Whoever the monster was who did this to Bonnie, I want them to pay. Because she did not deserve that fate. Nobody does. And whoever did that to her is a sick, sick individual. They need to be locked up with the key thrown away." "Okay," I croak. "I'll do my best." My head jerks up at the sound of the front door opening. Presumably, that's the detective who has been assigned to find out what happened to Bonnie. Despite how awful I'm feeling at this moment, I have to put my big girl pants on right now. It's the only way to help my friend get justice. Hopefully, they assigned one of their best detectives, and he will track down the killer ASAP. And then the detective steps into the room, and I get a look at his face. Oh, no. The female officer leaps to her feet and darts over to talk to him. "Detective Sousa," she says. "This is Sydney Shaw. She's a friend of Bonnie Griffin. She was the one who discovered the body." The detective is staring at me. He doesn't introduce himself, but it's unnecessary. I already know his name is Jake Sousa. I know because we lived together for an entire year.
"I know, Miss Shaw," he manages. Anyway, I'll take it from here, Morales. Thank you."
I can't imagine how many detectives there are in the NYPD. Hundreds? Thousands? Why did Jake have to be the one assigned to this case? Couldn't it have been a detective who doesn't bring back painful memories? Jake takes a few tentative steps toward me, like he's not sure if I might jump up and bite his head off. It's a distinct possibility. I take the opportunity to give my ex-boyfriend a once-over. Sadly, he still looks great. Pushing 40, with just a hint of gray in his temples. He's just as tall as real Kevin, but instead of being bone thin, he's muscular and still does a hell of a job filling out a suit. My eyes are on his left hand. No wedding band, but that isn't a surprise. He'll be single till the day he dies. Jake offers me a strained smile.
"Sydney," he says. "It's been a while."
Yes, I say tightly. I don't believe it's a coincidence he's here. I refuse to believe that my former boyfriend was assigned the case just by chance.
When I heard the address, I asked for the case, he finally says. I remembered this was where I was forwarding mail the year after you moved out.
I see. I really wish he weren't here right now. This is hard enough as it is without having to face my ex for the first time since our breakup. Jake settles down next to me on the sofa, his brown eyes leveled at me.
Look, Sydney, I'm not going to pretend this isn't awkward, but I've got a job to do here.
I don't respond, but I recognize he has an excellent point.
I need your help,
he says in that firm, deep voice of his. Jake has this way of making you believe that he's got everything under control. It's something I used to love about him.
We need to find the monster who did this to your friend.
I swipe at the tears forming in the corner of my right eye. He's right. I need to let go of my angry feelings at Jake, because the most important thing is getting justice for Bonnie. Fine.
First off, he says, tell me everything that happened this morning.
My voice is trembling slightly as I recount all the events of the morning, including going down to Bonnie's apartment, meeting Randy at the door, and then discovering her body, sliced to pieces in her bedroom. This wasn't a crime of passion. Bonnie was tortured. She was mutilated. Jake listens the whole time in that quiet, intense way he always does. Of every man I have ever met, Jake is the most skilled at listening. He makes you feel like he's tuned out everything else, and like you are the only person who exists in the entire universe.
I'm so sorry, Sid,
he says when I finish my story.
That sounds terrible, but you have my word.
He places a hand over his heart.
I am going to find the person who did this and make him pay.
Thank you, I say softly. And I actually believe him.
Now, tell me.
He clears his throat.
Do you know anyone who would have wanted to harm Bonnie?
No, she was awesome. Everyone liked her.
Was she dating anyone?
She was dating everyone. But I don't want to say that. It will sound like I'm posthumously slut-shaming Bonnie. And anyway, she was trying to be exclusive with someone. She dated a lot. She used the Cinch app. Do you know it?
I know it.
Can you look up who she was dating on the app?
Yes, we are looking into that. There was no sign of forced entry, so whoever did this was someone she knew and allowed inside.
I'm not telling Jake anything he didn't already know. He's the sort of person who is always one step ahead. Still, I want to give him a piece of information he might not already know. Something that could be important. There was someone special, though, I say.
Oh, yeah?
He looks at me with interest.
Who is that?
This guy she's been dating for the last year, I explain. But they recently decided to be exclusive. He nods slowly.
What's his name?
I open my mouth, but no sounds come out. What the hell was his name? She told us his name, didn't she? I could have sworn she said it at some point. Something starting with a J, maybe? Or was it a G? Maybe she didn't tell us. She was always very tight-lipped about guys she really liked because she didn't want to jinx it. And the truth is, I was so jealous of her newfound happiness that I didn't push her too hard for the details. I don't know, I admit. But she told me he was a doctor.
What kind of doctor? Did she say where he works?
No and no. I'm sorry. Jake is looking at me like I'm the most useless person ever, and I can't blame him. Bonnie was one of my best friends, and I know absolutely nothing about this guy she was so wild about. Why, oh why, didn't I make her tell us his name? She was texting him the night before last, I recall. They went out on a date, and then they were texting each other afterward. You can check on her phone and see who she was texting.
He rubs his jaw, as if debating whether to tell me something. Finally, he sighs.
We saw the text messages on her phone from what seemed like a boyfriend, but they were all coming from a burner phone.
A chill goes down my spine. The sexy doctor that Bonnie was crushing on the other day had been texting her from a burner phone. Of course, he probably wasn't even really a doctor. Everything he told her was probably a lie. Even if he had told her a name, it probably wasn't his real name. Is it possible that the man planned to kill Bonnie from their very first encounter? So, it's him then. I swallow down a lump in my throat. This guy she had been seeing was the one who killed her.
It's a possibility we are exploring, he admits. But it's not the only possibility.
It seems so obvious, and yet he's right. There are other possibilities. For example, there's a man who has a key to Bonnie's apartment. A man who could have let himself in without any struggle at all. A man who Bonnie herself was afraid to be alone with. But could I really point the finger at Randy? He's the boyfriend of one of my closest friends, and I've known him for years. Then again, if he is capable of doing this to Bonnie, it's my responsibility to let somebody know. Listen, I say. Our super, Randall Muncy, he has the key to Bonnie's apartment and... Jake nods slowly. He doesn't look at all surprised to hear this.
Mr. Muncy has an alibi for last night. His girlfriend was with him the entire time.
Of course. It doesn't surprise me that Randy and Gretchen spent last night cuddling, since that's what they do every night. I'm relieved to know Randy couldn't have done this, though. But there's one other potential suspect I need to mention. Also, I add, I went on kind of a bad date a couple of nights ago with this guy I met on Cinch, who you should probably look into.
You're dating? He blurts out.
I look at him sharply. Yes. Anyway, the guy sort of... I don't want to tell Jake exactly what went down between real Kevin and me, because I can't face the judgmental look in his eyes. But I also have to make sure he takes it seriously. The date didn't go well, and he showed up again yesterday to try to talk to me. Bonnie. She stood up for me. I can't talk anymore because of the lump in my throat. I want to burst into tears when I remember the way Bonnie told off real Kevin yesterday. She was a true friend. If there's any chance that she was killed because of me...
Listen, we are going to find the guy who did this, Jake assures me. Believe me, we have a lot of resources dedicated to this, and I want to give you my personal assurance that I am going to find him. We are going to look into this Cinch guy and every other possible suspect until we find the killer.
A crease forms between his brows.
You believe me, right, Sid?
I do believe him. There's nobody more dedicated to his job than Jake Souza. That is, in fact, why his first marriage ended in divorce. It's also the reason why I finally called it quits on our relationship when I realized I hadn't seen my boyfriend for even one meal in the last 2 weeks because he couldn't stop working. What's the point of being in a relationship with somebody you never see? Was what I yelled at him while I was packing my belongings. He never even promised to try to cut back on work. He told me, in that sincere voice of his, that his job was the most important thing in his life, and that any woman who was with him needed to understand and respect that. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the story of the first man I ever loved. I don't love Jake anymore. For a while, I hated him. But right now, I'm glad he's here. If anyone can find out the truth about what happened to Bonnie, it's this man.
Chapter 13. Before. Tom. My mother insists on giving me a ride to the community center for the health fair because it's all the way across town. At first, I tell her no. She's got a crummy, beat-up Chevy that looks like something out of the junkyard. It's embarrassing to be seen riding around in it. but then she offers to let me get behind the wheel, and I'm sold. I got my license over the summer, and I've barely even gotten to use it. "Are you checking your mirrors?" Mom asks me for the 5 millionth time as I change lanes in preparation for making a left turn. "Yes, of course I am. Just checking." "Ugh, Mom, I know how to drive." Finally, she stops quizzing me about my mirrors and turn signals and lets me just drive. It's only about 15 minutes by car, but I enjoy every minute of it. Maybe next year she'll let me drive to school in the morning. A lot of the seniors take their cars to school. I've saved up some money from tutoring, and I could probably get a car at least as good as this one. "So, is your girlfriend going to be there?" my mother asks me. Good thing we are stopped at a red light, because if we weren't, I definitely would have crashed into something. "What?" "Daisy Driscoll. She's your girlfriend, isn't she?" "How does she know that?" My face gets extremely hot. "Sort of, I guess. I don't know." Daisy and I have never talked about whether we're boyfriend and girlfriend. I'm not sure if she thinks about me that way. But then again, why not? We did kiss, and it's not like I'm going to be dating anyone else. Still, I don't want to assume. My mother smiles as she watches my expression. When she smiles, the creases on her face grow deeper. I don't know how my mother got so old-looking recently. It makes me sad sometimes. "Daisy is a nice girl," she says. "I'm glad you finally worked up the courage to ask her out." I don't know what to say to that. "Thank you?" So I just grunt. "If you ever need any advice, Tom, I don't." "Make sure you don't forget her birthday or Valentine's Day," she says. "And all girls love flowers." Not Daisy. She nearly started to cry when I plucked that daisy out of the ground. Maybe I can get her a flower in a pot or something. Anyway, I don't feel like discussing it with my mother. Instead, I focus all my energy on not crashing the car. We arrive at the parking lot of the community center 10 minutes early. I give my mother a quick peck on the cheek, then I hurry around to the entrance, hoping to get to spend a little time with Daisy. Unfortunately, when I arrive, Allison is the one waiting in front of the doors. I'm not in the mood for Allison. I didn't sleep well last night. I woke up at 2 a.m. to the sounds of my parents shouting at each other. Well, my father was shouting, and my mother was crying. Then I heard a loud crash, and I came running down the stairs. But by then, my father had already retreated into the basement, and my mother was sitting on the sofa, pretending she wasn't sobbing. It's hard to go back to sleep after something like that. But on the plus side, I didn't see any bruises on her face. I don't know about the rest of her, though. I try not to think about it. It just gets me angry. When Allison sees me approaching, she gives me one of her classic scowls. "Oh," she says, "it's you. I didn't know you were coming." "Daisy asked me to come," I say, trying not to sound defensive. Do I really need to justify volunteering at a health fair? "Wonderful," she says in a flat voice. Allison has never said a nice word to me in all the time I've known her. Part of me wants to ask her why she dislikes me so much. But there's another part of me that already knows why and doesn't want to hear her say it. "Well," she finally says, "Daisy will be glad you're here." Yeah. A thought occurs to her, and she scrunches up her entire face. "Slug isn't coming, is he?" "Nah." Slug wouldn't come.